Alright, so hello and welcome to another episode of The Raven in the Road. We're going to continue our conversation with Johnny Racket, a seasoned solo artist who is currently here in Charlotte, North Carolina. In this segment, we'll dive more into the boots-on-the-ground operations. We're going to be exploring the mechanics and strategies used to successfully monetize gigs. We'll get into performance strategies, hardware used, song selections, and more. The main basis just being to receive a deeper understanding on what exactly goes into a show.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I totally agree, which is why I've steered into doing, like, I have a diva set. Okay. So, and of course, that's not gender specific, in my opinion. There are male and female divas, in my opinion. I'm working on my diva status.
Yeah.
But generally speaking, everything, I have like a lady set because you have natural contrast. And and I do the same thing whenever a female guitar soloist talks to me, and I'm just like, learn songs from men. Because that natural contrast is a really nice feature for a listener. Yeah. Because they just don't expect me to sing Adele.
Right.
And they don't expect me to do Rihanna or Taylor Swift or Cranberries or whatever it happens to be. I just really like adopting those. And I started doing it on cruise ships, and the response has been overwhelmingly positive.
Oh, wow.
So that in every, I don't know why, because I did tons of great songs. So whether it's Dolly Parton or Billie Eilish, I'll sing it. I'll do it because I think there are great songs and great artists. And of course, I'm happy to do different genres. But yeah, having a little versatility and broad appeal, I don't think there's a better thing to have as someone. Not only that, but it keeps you from getting boring. You're doing the same songs over and over again. Like, that sounds like a job to me. It's like, who wants? Because you got the ticket. You're creative when are held on to their creativity, which is something I actually like to say, because I think most children are creative. Mm-hmm. They're curious. They have that kind of natural innate thing. However, those that get that creativity kind of like, you know, worn out of them. Like, they're just like, it's just pragmatism seems to take the place. Like, oh, this isn't it for you.
Man.
Like, you need to get a job, or you need to go to college. You need to get your life together. Mm-hmm. And some of those creative pursuits or curiosities kind of get pushed back further and further.
Yeah.
Whereas kids, it's so interesting, because I have so many nephews and nieces, but to see how they can just make up a game on the spot with four or five others, and they're all like, you know, 7 years old, and they just made up a game, and they all agree to the rules, and you're gonna have one person that's like, you're cheating, or something like that, and that game didn't exist 10 seconds ago, but they were able to do it, holding on to that kind of creative spirit and everything. I think that's just something that people that do it for a living have just held on to from childhood.
Yeah.
That's something I.
One
I
will
think is the case.
One I think the walking actually also plays a huge role into that.
Yeah, you think so? Yeah,
I really do. I really do.
That's interesting. Yeah, no, because I made it a point of not listening to things or consuming things while I was walking.
Oh yeah, it's a hard rule. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's just of just being.
Mm-hmm.
Out on my walks, I think is a huge thing. And I wasn't familiar with the term, but of course all my neighbors have gotten pretty familiar with me, and just like, oh, the walking guy. Because I'm just all throughout the day, you know, probably 3-4 times a day, I'm just out and about. Just walking around my neighborhood, and of course the greenways around here
are the greenways.
Just a walking fantasy over here. And they come out and everything, and one of my neighbors, they're like, oh yeah, you're out on your mindfulness walk. And I was like, oh yeah, I guess I am. Yeah, because it's just, yeah, it's one of those things where I'm able to unplug from, you know, my general stresses and just you know, be present, where you aren't seesawing between, you know, worrying about the future or bemoaning the past.
Right.
But yeah, no, that's another great thing that I like about being a musician, is that it requires my focus and demands that I'm present.
Right.
And you can let your mind wander playing songs that you've played 1,000 times. But that is just a clear indicator to me that you need to learn new music.
Yeah.
That forces more concentration and requires that you be present with the people that you're performing with.
Right.
You aren't thinking about, you know, what you're going to have for lunch tomorrow.
Yeah.
Like, if you do, you're likely, I don't know how, depending on how good you are, and how well you're able to adopt music on autopilot. But I've been doing this for over 10 years and I still mess up lyrics.
Yeah.
Even when I'm concentrating, and I'm just like, man, what is the second verse of this line? What is it? So it's just one of those things that, you know, anything that roots you to the present moment, I say, do it.
Well, honestly, and that's why I'm such a big fan of improv.
Oh, nice.
And, you know, definitely getting there are some songs where, you know, I definitely have some like staple ideas that I'll kind of work around, but I feel so bad because the people's like, wow, that was so great. I was like, I'm glad you like, I have no idea what I played. Like it was like, yeah. I wrote this song.
I hope I was recording.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Like, yeah. I wrote this song in the moment for you. And often what I've started doing now, especially on saxophone, is I'll let the loop go a few times and I'll just find someone in the audience, try not to be creepy about it. But I'm like, all right, this is going to be about you. And so I'll just kind of like, okay, you know, like, who are they with? How's that interaction going? And I'll kind of create up a story, and then I'll improvise something for that story. So it's like, you know, I usually don't tell them. Maybe I should start doing that, you know, just kind of a fun thing. But yeah, and it's like, I wrote this in the moment here for you. Yeah, and just the ideas that come out of that are so unique and different.
No, absolutely. I'm thrilled to hear that you say that, because I've done similar things where, of course, like the instrumentation, at least in my experience, is in the writing process, is the first thing to come.
Yeah.
In my experience, like, I'm humming something, which is why I love voice memos.
Yes.
That's how I keep track of everything.
Yep.
I remember being on tour and everything, and I was just humming this tune to myself for hours, trying to hold on to it because I didn't have my phone had died, and I was just trying desperately to hold on to this like little hook.
Yeah.
And thankfully, because as soon as we got there, and I was like, sorry, guys, I'm going straight to my room.
Yeah.
And I got to get this out. Otherwise, you know, it can go.
Yeah.
And you can sit down with the guitar and it's gone. And you're like, no. So it's just like, it's one of those things. Yeah, voice memos has saved me because I've been able to revisit old material, even if I didn't have lyrics for it at the time.
Mm.
Or something to, you know. You know, I had the canvas, I had the outline, but I didn't have anything to fill in the space, so to speak. So yeah, voice memos has been a godsend. I love it. I have hundreds of them on my phone. And some of them are terrible. Some of them are kind of derivative. It's just like, wow, that sounds a lot like, you know, you know, fill in the blank. And then sometimes, you know, a guitar riff is not as unique as you thought it was. And you're like, oh, okay, never mind. Back to the drawing board.
Well, there you go.
And I have to jam a little bit more to find something that hasn't been played. But it's exciting. I love that creative process. And I was just doing it last night. Like, it's something that's unique, in that I can just sit down with my guitar, start playing, and see what happens. And then, unbeknownst to me, 3 or 4 hours have gone by.
No.
I haven't had that kind of experience with anything else. No. That's just where time just kind of melts away and I'm completely immersed and active. A lot of people call it like flow state.
Mm.
I love it. I don't see myself to stopping that anytime soon, but yeah.
Yeah. Well, especially with the loop, that's, I was getting so much trouble back when I worked at the music shop. Cause you know, even on my days off, cause we had no lives, so we'd just go to work and hang out with everyone there. Yeah, and they had a little looper up front, so I just, same thing. Like, just kind of like, oh, cool.
It's time for time to go to lunch.
Right, yeah. Like, I'm like, all right, this is why I nice. Need to start, yeah.
Not a bad day at work.
Yeah, just hours go by. It's crazy. So I've seen you at your shows. You do a great job.
Thanks.
Yeah. And I've seen you do some things differently. So, you know, oftentimes, hopefully people at the very least have cards or something. But what are some things that you do during your performances to help for, you know, whether it's people seeing you for the first time, but interact, engage with you?
First things first, and I haven't always done this. This is actually a newer addition. But before the show even starts, I put out my QR codes. So I have table tents, and it has my Venmo QR code, and on the other side, it has my flow code for signing up to my email list. So it's just a very basic smart link that directs them by scanning it to a landing page so that they can join my email list. So that, you know, it's not just a one-off. I can follow up with them. Email list, in my opinion, is an undervalued tool for musicians and just general business things. I look at every single gig as a promotional marketing opportunity. Now, if I can get, you know, 5-6 people here to sign up on to my email list at every single show, that's hundreds of people that have seen me personally. And if they've signed up to my email list, they've likely tipped or contributed. So not only do they sign up to my email list, but they've also financially contributed and supported me. So that's like another tier as far as, you know, going from cold to hot clients. Because every single booked show at a public venue is a means to an end for me. And that end is building rapport with the clientele base to book private gigs, whether that be weddings or birthday parties, anniversaries, corporate events or whatever, everything. Every single public show to me is a means towards that end, because though all those other ones that I just mentioned are dramatically more lucrative. And the more that you have, the less public venues that you need to do. The more lucrative shows you do, the less you have to work, which I think is a positive thing. I think if you're doing 3 or 4 shows a week, great, solid. I've done it. I've been doing that for years and everything. But in my opinion, I think there should be weeks where you don't have to work. I think there should be weeks where you have light weeks, where you do maybe 2 or 1 show a week, and setting yourself up, positioning yourself at all of your public, and I say public, I have that breakdown. Everything public is a public venue, restaurant, bar, brewery, bottle shop, anything that, where the expectation is that you will come in and entertain an unset amount of customer base, patrons, whereas a private event is a set guest list, typically, usually for like a particular business and their clients, but you don't have, you know, random people coming into the business or the space to come in. But as I'm kind of building rapport at all my shows and everything, I'm also putting out all those table tents and everything and introducing myself before the show even starts.
Yeah.
So you don't, in my opinion, I don't think you should start a show without talking to every single person that's present before it starts. So the work starts before the work. So you can chat with each table for, you know, a few minutes. It's usually a very quick, you know, hey, my name is Johnny. I'm a house musician here this evening. I'm going to play some songs. If you have something you would like to hear, here's how you make requests on your table if you're shy and you don't want to come up and speak to me. And also, if you want to stay in touch, you can flip it around and join my email list so we can be friends.
No.
So that's like my general spiel whenever I go up to tables. And that's paid dividends. Not only that, but I suggest this to every single performer, is to have a QR code so people can pay you. Mm. If you're just relying on the money that the venue is paying you to play there, then you, in my opinion, are leaving hundreds of dollars on the table per show. Like, it's, and there are reliably where I make as much money from tips as I'm being paid by the venue. And that's purely because I have built rapport with the clientele. They know my name and they've had a conversation with me even before I've strummed the note.
No.
And then making it easy for people to make requests. That's what builds engagement and rapport. Because there are dozens of people that are too shy to actually come up in front of everyone and request a song, or they don't want to bother you, or yada, yada, fill in the blank space of excuses of why someone doesn't want to come up and make a request. But if the QR code is right there and it says, you know, it invites people to, you know, because I have it written there, request a song, that's encouragement right there. Like, people are like, oh, okay. So it's very clear. Like, so they, so generally speaking, I'll go in to a show and everything, and before I even start, I'll have 3 or 4 requests before the show even starts, which is just a nice thing. And plus, you know, having, you know, an extra, you know, everyone tips because it's all goes through Venmo. I would suggest it. Yeah, create a business account on Venmo first. Because you got to pay taxes. it sucks. But yeah, there's no way around it.
No, it's important to,
But it also, there's a back end benefit to that as well. And that you have the person that is tipped you and contributed however much amount, because I think that should be in a spreadsheet, name, you know, venue, and how much they've contributed. You have that information, which as far as metadata goes, I think is incredibly important. Especially whenever you want to reach out to people like, hey, I'm available for private parties. If you have, you know, your friend's getting married, I'll play for an engagement party. If your friend's having, you know, a bridal shower, I'll play for that. Because I've done all these kinds of gigs. If your parents have, you know, their 40th wedding anniversary, or they want to renew their vows, I can play some love songs from the 70s that they'll probably like. These are examples of private events that I've played dozens of times. And all these events pay significantly well. And musicians can do that, especially as a soloist. You have, is getting out of that mentality that gigs are few and far between. That isn't the case. If you go straight to the people that like you and have already demonstrated with their money that they value what you do, you have an opportunity to reach out to them. And that's paid dividends over the past 3 years, especially where I've been a little bit more aggressive in my outreach. And aggressive might not be the term. But even still, I do think that some things warrant, you know, the personal touch as opposed to some, you know, generic email blast to your email list, reaching out to someone personally. It's how I get a lot of organic leads from couples that want me to play for their wedding, whether it's a cocktail hour or a ceremony. And again, anyone that knows anything about the wedding market, it is lucrative. And getting, empowering myself as a musician and others is what I've been focusing on. Because I want to see musicians do well. I found it galling living in Nashville, seeing how musicians were treated. Yep. You know, dime a dozen. If you don't play for $50 and a slice of pizza, you know, 20 other people will too. Yeah. And it's, I think it's a spit in the face.
No.
But some places are able to get away with it because, again, you have tons of musicians coming in, undercutting your prices. Yeah. But even still, if you have, you know, 500 people that have contributed to you, whether it's, you know, $5 to $50, they've still taken money out of their own pocket and put it in yours. People remember things like that. People, in my experience and everything, because I remember people that I tip that make an impression on me. And I think if I remember these people that I support, I don't think my experience is that unique.
Right.
Now there are some people that, you know, that aren't going to respond, and that's fine. No big deal there, but it's definitely a market to target, for creating, you know, that organic lead. So you aren't reliant on getting residencies, and you aren't dependent on venues gatekeeping. Because you'll find with a lot of places, as you try to book more and more, they have their lineup. They have their people that have been playing there for years and they like it. Yep. And for a lot of venues, the story starts and stops there. Yep. Whereas if you're able to get more and more private bookings, you have more options.
Right.
And they're good options, in my opinion.
Yeah, so. I like that. Well, I feel like it's a really good way to just be intentional over kind of what you have. And instead of being a victim of circumstance of, oh, they already have their, but it's like, no, like I'm actively getting out there, forming my own leads and potential future opportunities. So I really like that. But yeah, I've always been really big too, just like you're saying, like just engagement. Cause once again, as an audience member, not thinking my experience is radically different than anyone else's. You know, I've heard some just jaw dropping musicians, but when I looked at them, it's just stale face. They sing, they play, they're done. And I've also seen some just incredible performers where I'm like, add a tune, singing from the back, you know, this sound third, but I was like, dude, that was just fun. Yeah. Like they're jumping around, the interaction especially. And I'm like, that's what's more memorable. And so, you know, while having those standards and everything is so important and playing great and everything, like if you can connect down on like a heart level with the audience, I don't know. It makes it so much more enjoyable, I think. But also financially, like I really do. Big fan of spreadsheets. Huge. Oh yeah. Oh, Google Sheets. Let's
Excel,
go.
Give it
yes.
To me.
All the things. but yeah. And it, like you can, I can see the shift and the dramatic shift in the numbers when it's like, wow, this was that time I was really upset because I had 20 different things going on. So I was kind of shut down. And that's the time I was out there early chatting with people. And
yeah, it really does. I can't say it enough. If you're not able to connect with people, in your personal life and everything, music is a great vehicle. But if you're not even able to do it through music, then you're gonna struggle. Yeah. And I feel like that's where a lot of musicians that have been doing this for years that aren't making the kind of money that they think they deserve.
Right.
Those that are, you know, they're good at their craft. They've sacrificed and they've committed to being good at what they do. But that's one thing. It's one thing to be good, and it's another thing to internalize the music that you're adopting and show a little bit of emotion and everything. And I understand that's a difficult thing to do once you've played the song, you know, hundreds of times.
Yeah.
I don't really have any emotional attachment to Wagon Wheel any longer. I do so not care for that song at all. I've even had some clients specifically requests that I don't play.
I've actually got that from Wagon Wheel Limbo.
I've even had someone come up to me after someone specifically requested it, and they're like, we'll pay you double not to play it.
That is
awesome.
And I was
like, damn, that is...
All right.
I mean, that's a bold move. But I definitely took that money. I was like, sorry, so you got outbid. I don't know what to tell you. But no, it's one of those things that, you know, whether you're playing some of these songs, some of these classics and I have some that I'm just like, I pretend not to know some days. And whether I'm just not feeling it or, you know, it's, you know, there's 10 minutes left in the show. Oh. And you've just been hit by four requests. And I'm just like, not that one. And I was like, I'm gonna be choosy now.
Yeah.
Which I definitely warn people and everything. Like, again, I get stumped every single night. Like, someone comes in with, you know, what I think is a out of pocket request. I'm just like, you know, fair enough. I don't have any Grateful Dead, you know. No. Great band, Deadheads, love them, lovely people and everything. But that's a jam band. I'm a soloist, you know. It's not in my repertoire. Fair enough. I'm sure they have some great songs. Not super familiar with Grateful Dead, and it's the same thing. And if someone comes up and tipsy and everything, I haven't had anyone like come up and demand their money back. Like, you didn't play my song and everything. It's usually something that's explicit in their requests and everything, is that they've already enjoyed what you've been doing.
Right.
And but if you also know their song as well,
right,
fantastic. That's how I receive and everything. But usually speaking and everything, I encourage people just as like a nice way to respond.
Mm-hmm.
If they request, say, for example, I had a client request Modern English. Again, yeah, that's
that's
the response.
Okay.
I had a very simple, I was like, Modern English, okay. An 80s band.
Okay.
They have one that's, and it's a, when I heard the song, I was like, oh, okay, fair enough. I stopped the world and with you.
Okay,
yeah.
Okay.
So, yeah, again, like a pretty common song and everything, but as a one-hit wonder, and most people, I don't think, could name another song from them.
Right.
I hadn't even heard of them. But when they played the song and everything, they're like, yeah, you have. Yeah, you have and everything. I was like, okay. But that happens all the time, you know, and across the decades and across genres. I mean, we're talking probably billions of songs, you know. You're going to get stumped, you know, but I offer those that, you know, they come in, they have a song request. I don't know how to play it, or I'm not familiar with it. I can't wing it. I'm just like, okay, well, let me know what genre that is, or, you know, what decade. Or if you want to just comment underneath that request, they don't have to make another request, with some options, like, you know, give me some 70s, you know, give me something from, you know, from artists like this. And they list like four or five artists and everything. That's usually how it goes and everything. And that gives me some options that even if I don't know any Modern English, I have, you know, some other options from the 80s and from, like, you know, whether it's, you know, Bon Jovi or Prince or Poison or Def Leppard or, you know, fill in the blank. You know, there's tons of options throughout the 80s of artists and songs to choose from that will usually accommodate someone that wants something like that. But yeah, that's what I usually do in as far as engaging. Yeah, no, that was a lot, but there's my 15-minute answer to the question. Yeah.
You have been working on the singer-songwriter.
Oh, yes.
Serious thing going on. So just kind of what's the why behind that? Why bother with everyone else instead of you just kind of doing your thing? And
Yeah, so that's an interesting question because just to give a little bit of context and everything. So I'm a full-time musician, but I'm also a singer-songwriter. So I write, compose, I do not produce original songs, and but I am an unsigned artist. So I don't have a label, I don't have, you know, a trust fund and lots of money to market myself. And the why behind Keep It Original, which is the songwriter collective that I co-founded with two other local songwriters here in Charlotte, Jay Hoff and Fred Heinz. So we wanted to essentially create a songwriting community here in Charlotte. So that's the biggest why, and everything is not only just throwing shows or hosting shows, songwriting shows, that is, for myself, but also cultivating a community of songwriters and a platform for them to, you know, share some of their songs and then have the opportunity for cross-pollination. 'Cause what I want to offer other local songwriters is an opportunity to play their original music, which is, as a songwriter myself, I cherish those opportunities to actually have a listening audience, to have people show up and not chat and be, you know, moderately engaged while they eat their food and watch a football game. To actually have a listening environment, listening to your songs, and then to connect with other songwriters in your area. I think that's something that's very common in Nashville. And of course, it's a more of a songwriter area. So the highly saturated and lots of songwriting round opportunities. So very much like Evening Muse and everything, but there are 25 venues like Evening Muse in Nashville. But there's a listening room network all around the country and everything, and I wanted to create something like that. So that's that's the big why and everything, is that I wanted to, you know, selfishly, you know, have a platform to share my own music, which is a lot of fun. I love writing and I love sharing it with my friends and family and those that like my music. But also do that for other musicians, because that's something I feel like is missing. We have a creative scene here in Charlotte. However, I don't feel like we have much of a creative culture. I'm not sure that we have that community aspect where most musicians know other musicians. You know, they're aware of their own material and aware of, you know, their style, and, you know, just journeys as musicians and songwriters. I feel like that's something I experienced by doing songwriting rounds in Nashville, and just getting to know. However, and one key feature, and I think it's a unique feature for mine and everything, is that we do our very best to make it financially feasible night, so that musicians don't have to make that decision of I want to be a musician and I have this gig that's going to pay me $300, or I can make no money and do a songwriting event, which anyone that's been a songwriter and everything, it's a hard thing to do to host an event and get people to come to an event for songwriters that are not known. You know, most people that arrive and everything are coming into this fairly dry, like, you know, friends of friends, or maybe one person in the group knows me and they're bringing their friends along. And winning those people over and creating an environment where they feel compelled to do so is definitely challenging, but it's been great so far. I utilize a lot of different techniques for making it financially viable and even preferable for musicians to come in and be like, okay, you aren't going to have to sacrifice. I'm not expecting you to come in and play songs on a weekend night and sacrifice mm-hmm. hundreds of dollars that you could have been making elsewhere. Yeah. So, and of course, I could get into all the ways that we make it that way with like songwriting funds and getting sponsors for the events and everything, which go a long way for creating that like baseline so that those that participate have more and more reason to do so. Oh. And I get submissions from songwriters every week now, which is great. So awesome. Yeah, I got like a little catalog of musicians that I want to work with and want to you know, kind of put in the rotation. Because I mean, you were able to attend the debut show and everything. It was just, it's a unique experience, I think, to have local musicians and more local centric Charlotte based musicians share their songs and have a listening audience support it.
Yeah.
So well, have and the merch
last
tables.
Part. Yeah. Well, and that's what I really enjoyed because I think at that point, that might have been the first time I heard you play live. I think I caught Val a few times. Jay Hoff, that was the first time I've seen him. But it was really cool because I feel like, especially when you're there, like just intentionally listening, I was able to get so much, I feel like I could, you know, background information. Where have you been? What kind of stuff have you done? What have you gotten into, you especially?
Yeah.
you know? Yeah. So precarious situations. I love it. It's great.
Yeah.
But yeah, you know, I was also able to feel like, oh man, like what kind of thoughts do these musicians have? What do they work through? What are, and I just, it's almost kind of like therapy in a way, where, you know, in the good and the bad, you know, you see that in the, you know, the music, the pros and the cons, valleys and the hills, but it's like, I just feel like I know, you know, y'all three better just from having been there and listened. And it's like, even if, you know, we hadn't talked, I could have walked away like, oh man. Yeah, I know them.
That's great.
That relationship is
no. I'm thrilled to hear you, that response because that's part of what we're trying to do is, and part of the format of the show and everything is that I wanted to create an event that provided that context for each of the songs because it's like that next tier. Like you listen to a song for the first time. And you have that experience and you're like, wow, this is incredible. I love their voice. I love the lyrics. Yeah. Like the production is incredible. Like I'm having an experience right now. But then beyond that, you know, I go through my usual routine whenever I hear a song. Oh, okay. So what do they look like? You know, how do they sound live? What's the acoustic version sound like?
No.
You know, so I start looking at different versions. And then usually last and everything, I go into like an analysis of the song. What's the background of the song, the track and everything? What is the song about? Who is it about? You know?
No.
And so it's just like having that in real time.
No.
Someone, you know, tell you, oh, well, I wrote this while I was, you know, up in, you know, Minnesota for the winter and I was feeling nostalgic or, you know, homesick. Or whatever. And then they play the song and everything. And then you're like, and your experience has completely changed given that context for the song. So it's something that I've always enjoyed about music that I listen to. So that's definitely a feature that I wanted to incorporate because if you sing four or five songs, original songs, and people are still unclear about who you are, then I don't think you've adequately written those songs or something there's some disconnect.
Right.
Because I feel like if you are raw and honest in your creative output, people should have a good understanding from an audience perspective of who you are and what you have to offer. After that many tracks, I think. Mm. Yeah.
No? No?
I'm old, so I don't have a TikTok yet. So that's fair. We're getting there. My nieces and nephews shame me.
Right.
Endlessly. They're like, Facebook is for old people.
You know.
Like, fair enough.
I've heard from some of the marketing guys I've listened to, have been talking about Facebook actually coming back.
Really?
And especially because so many left, supply demand. So they're like, Instagram is so overly saturated. That's why you don't get that organic reach. A lot of it was in TikTok, but now people are actually making full circle back to Facebook, especially for the groups, so like fan pages, things like that.
Interesting, yeah.
And so especially for those wanting to invest in like marketing and ad dollars, because the field is so empty, the price has declined. So like, it's actually a fairly good.
Yeah, that's another thing. Yeah, from a consumer point of view, I don't spend that much time on Facebook. No. But from a business point of view, I think Facebook and Instagram are great tools for just like putting out material, whether it's promoting a show. I actually purchased a program that was specifically part of the program is marketing and promotion utilizing social media. And actually creating a marketing budget, you know, and targeting, like the targeting features on Facebook are unbelievable.
Oh,
I mean, alarming.
It is. Yeah, I know. It's like the give and take. It's like a business.
You can target people based on their music taste, where they live, their age group, you know, whether they've liked a particular artist or not and their pages. Like, it is pretty shocking. What you can find out. do with that information what you will. But yes, from a business perspective, I'm going to keep using it.
Yeah.
As far as consuming content on it, maybe. Right. Maybe a little less.
Right. Your little VPN and some extra security features there. Well, thank you again for taking the time. I really enjoyed this.
Likewise. Thanks for having me. This is a lot of fun. Love to do something like this again. It's great.
Thank you. For the people that want to hear more about you, kind of find out more, where can they go?
So a few places. I guess the best place is probably just my website, johnnyrocketmusic.com. I have all my socials posted there, as well as links to my music that they could listen to. But if they just want to go directly to my social media pages, Johnny Rocket Musician on Instagram and Facebook,